and mail it in, as long as it's received by Election Day. No reason to vote absentee is needed. For a ballot and more information, contact your municipal clerk.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, the Kenosha County Aging and Disability Resource Center has launched a new family caregiver support group that meets in person and virtually the first Thursday of every month. For more information, call 262-605-6646. This is WGTD-HD, serving Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College, and Jenny Tunkies, former reporter for the Kenosha News and a former chief of staff for the Kenosha County Executive. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Hello, and welcome to Community Matters. I'm your host, Jane Herring. Today, we will be talking with John Zarin, who is the coordinator of Gateway Technical College's Fab Lab, located on the IMET campus in Sturtevant. A makerspace movement has been growing over the past 10 years and even more. Gateway was a leader in this movement, and its lab has grown over the years to remain a leader in integrative learning. So, John, let's start with the basics. You, as the head of the Fab Lab, what is a Fab Lab? And we hear so much about makerspaces now, and seems most entities have one. What's the Fab Lab all about?
Yeah, it can be confusing. Fab Lab, makerspace, you know, going over to your friend's garage to use their bandsaw, right? So, Fab Labs originated in 1998 out of MIT, and there was a cross-platform physicist, Neil Gershenfeld, who came up with the idea that with five pieces of computer-driven equipment, you could literally make almost anything. And those five pieces of equipment were pieces of equipment that had changed radically since, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s. So they were 3D printers, laser engraving, vinyl cutting, desktop CNC, and soldering. Soldering isn't really computer-driven, but you need to solder if you're going to have electric components. So the idea out of MIT was with these five pieces of equipment, you could make anything, and that was the class that they formulated. They actually had a class called How to Make Almost Anything. And they basically studied how these pieces of equipment have changed the way people make things. I mean, think about the birdhouse that you made when you were in third grade, or at least the one I made when I was in third grade, right? You get out a piece of wood, and you get out a saw and a hammer and some nails, and you saw the wood, and you hammer it together. Well, you don't have to do that anymore. Now you can bring up your computer. You can design it. You can make it as complicated as you want. You can 3D print it. You can 3D print out of plastic. You can 3D print out of plastic that has wood in it, so it even still looks like a normal birdhouse if you want. But the possibility that these spaces explored was just amazing. And I think it was one of those things that was perfect at the time. I like to say that was a point in time where we experienced a cultural paradigm shift. So we basically changed our sense of reality and how we did things, even though printers had been around for over 20 years.
Really? I guess I assume that they were an entirely new invention when they were introduced, I guess, on a more commercial basis, maybe 10 years ago, but they've been around twice as long as that.
Yeah, they've been around since the 80s. I think 86 is when they came up with the first rapid prototyper. And the idea was you could prototype a lot quicker with something like a 3D printer. And they became pretty commonplace. I mean, if you think about it, what could be more simple than the concept of just laying material on top of material to build something? I hate to show my age, but remember Silly Sand, where you'd pour it in the water, right? And you could make like these cool castles and stuff by stacking it up. Well, 3D printing utilizes one of the most basic concepts in manufacturing, which is the idea of movement in three-dimensional space. So imagine a bit or a blade moving in space in relationship to material. And that's all manufacturing is. But now, instead of an operator doing it, we figured out a way to interpret it in software and send it to a computer and have a computer do it. So the repeatability just went through the roof, you know. And then the idea of 3D printing has become so commonplace now that it's spreading out to every discipline and industry you can imagine. I mean, they're using them in construction. They're using them in medical. They're using them in the food industry. So it's literally nothing we can't 3D print.
And I think you're right. Before, we thought of it as something that only large industry could afford. But I think they've also become more affordable as well as more commonplace, correct?
Yeah. And that's one of the tenets of the whole maker culture. And we can go into that a little bit too, the difference between Fab Lab and maker spaces. And that was the whole concept that computers got really strong and powerful throughout the 80s and 90s. And then equipment became smaller, easier to use, and more affordable. So adjunct industry could afford things like CNC. And ShopBot is one of the companies that makes a desktop CNC router. They were one of the first companies to really say, hey, let's make this affordable so that everybody can have one in their garage, which would have been the late 90s. And then over the course of the next 5 years, that's when the whole make culture evolved, and Make magazine came out in 2006. So makerspaces were more independent spaces, conventionally tooled, but also access to some computer-driven stuff, where people would pool their resources and they would connect on the internet and share information. Whereas Fab Labs were more of an educational environment, you know, with more of a structured lab that functioned in conjunction with some sort of school or college.
And you're kind of crossing over two different questions I have. One is whether a relationship continues with MIT on the educational side. And the other is just trying to, I guess, define Gateway's Fab Lab against general maker spaces. So I'm not sure if those two interrelate.
Yes, it's been a very interesting evolution since 1998. And I'm not sure I understand it entirely. So I don't want to say things that aren't accurate or true. So I'll summarize, I'll paraphrase what I believe happened was the spaces exploded exponentially. You know, we went in the space of about 10 years of having like several dozen to having hundreds and then ultimately thousands. And originally MIT had a very specific charter and equipment that you needed in order to call yourself an actual fab lab. And most fab labs, you know, would check it off with MIT, and they would check in with them, and they would make sure they qualified, you know, based on the standards that were set forth by them. And Gateway was an actual chartered fab lab, you know, that followed the MIT standards. MIT standards were something like you needed to have certain inventory on stock. So things like electronic components, you needed to have the equipment that I called out before, the five basic pieces of equipment. And then you needed to be open to the public a certain number of hours per month so that the community could come use the space. And Gateway, of course, covers all of that. And then ultimately, I think about 5 or 6 years ago, MIT kind of started, you know, not worrying so much about it. The spaces themselves evolved quite a bit. So the relationship of an actual fab lab calling itself a fab lab and how it connects with MIT has become a little bit less regulated.
Do you have benefits from being chartered with MIT? I mean, do you have any kind of access to additional educational information?
Originally, MIT had a network. So when we were chartered that way, you could, I had a monitor in my lab that could connect to any chartered fab lab in the world. So we had fab labs open up on that screen from Spain and Madrid and Iceland and England. And it was just really amazing. You could literally go up to this screen and open up any one of these portals and talk to people who are in a fab lab somewhere else in the world in real time. So there was at first sort of a networking that happened between these labs. The charter is primarily a prestige thing, but if someone goes and opens a fab lab and they don't follow the charter, it's not like anybody's gonna say, "Hey, you can't do that." So it's kind of a in the spirit of collaboration, and in the spirit of knowledge, and in the spirit of experimentation and prototyping and communities coming together. And there are other groups as well. There is a U.S. Fab Lab Network, which Gateway was a huge part of. That's been around, I think, about 8 years. I think it's still going. And they would do a conference every year where all the colleges would come together. So you could share information and network and connect with other fab labs. So those are, I believe, most of them are still active, although at the beginning of the pandemic, the MIT Fab Lab kind of rebranded itself with a special network. And I don't know much about that. So that's my spotty knowledge of the history of the involvement of MIT with these spaces.
Well, and it makes sense, too, in that as things were being developed, and so many entities really did not know what they should have in a fab lab or in a sophisticated educational makers space. Here you had something to follow and know what to do. Now it's, as you use the word, commonplace. It does seem to make sense that they don't have to be as worried about it.
Yeah, and we can flash back 5 years ago when I started at Gateway. Well, actually now it's closer to 7, excuse me.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah, and I will say that this is probably the most fun job I've ever had. So when I got here, I would say that we were already to the point where I came in like 2016, and the space was kind of lights off and a couple pieces of equipment here and there and up against the walls. And in the space of that, 1998 to 2016, I think what a fab lab is, it was still very something nobody really knew about. So I come in and people go, "What is this place? What do you do here? What is this?" So it was really interesting to me that we had this facility, and Gateway's Fab Lab started in 2012. Today, this is our 10th anniversary, by the way. When Gateway started, it was because the president of the college heard about them and thought, what an amazing way to showcase advanced manufacturing. He thought it was really important that the community understand that Gateway is literally the portal if you're interested in learning about any of this stuff. And if you think about the workplace, how that's changed, how it's so different than it was, even when I started 7 years ago, that it was very insightful and forward thinking of him to say, "Hey, we need one of these spaces. We need to start integrating it into classes." Now, when I got here, it was struggling. There was really only one person who was running it. And my old boss was way over his head with the amount of, it's really hard to keep a space open, work the hours, understand all the equipment, do all the projects. So when I came in, it was literally just, okay, turn on the lights, push the equipment out in the middle of the room where everybody can see it, invite everybody in, do cool projects. So we went in the first 2 years that I was here, we started tracking people walking through the door. And we went from about, 20 or 30 people a day to typically over 100 people a day who are just kind of walking in and checking it out and working on projects.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was one of those, it was a speed bump, getting people to understand it was here and what it is and that it's open to the public. And of course, my goal at first was, instead of 10 people walking in the door going, "Hey, I didn't know we had this, this is really cool," I wanted to make at least 5 out of the 10 walking through going, "Hey, I heard so much about this place. Told me." But that kind of speaks to the entire concept of makerspace and Fab Lab and how they've been reinterpreted and how that landscape is changing radically after 20 years. And some people might remember a couple years ago, the governor set aside, you know, grants to do fab labs in schools. I think there were 25 grants handed out. I want to say it was maybe 3 or 4 years ago. It was before the pandemic hit. So recognition of what these spaces can do in an educational and community environment is there. It's just a question of getting the word out, making sure people understand. I always tell people to think of this as like going to the library. If you're interested in 3D printing, 3D printing is so exciting to most kids and to most people in general. And to come in and think, oh, I can run a 3D printer here and I've never run one. I want to see what it's like and understand a little bit more about what it takes. And you can actually go to Gateway's Fab Lab out in Sturtevant, walk in the door, and we'll show you how to run a printer and what it is. And so they're a little bit more commonplace now, but I think a lot of the buzz around these labs is just the whole boom in 3D printing.
Well, and let's talk about and maybe relate equipment as we discuss, but I think part of the problem with most people is, well, how does this apply to me? How could I make some use out of this? And I thought maybe we could break down different communities, such as, you know, Gateway students. I know you have the Real School and businesses, artists, and it seems to me any one of those groups could use it, but they might use it very differently. Let's start with Gateway students because that's the most obvious.
Yeah, I might subvert this just a little bit back to when I first walked in the door. Because I remember on my first day talking to my boss when I walked in and looking at the space and saying, do you realize what you've got here? Do you understand the potential? Do you understand what can be done with a space like this? Because it was mind-boggling to me. Now, the Gateway students benefit directly, but when I first came in, the first thing I realized was, and this is an interesting fact about me, I am not an engineer. I have a degree in art. So I studied sculpture, and I've shown professionally as an artist my whole life and still do. But in my brain, I started immediately taking things sideways. So the benefit, to answer your question directly, the benefit to Gateway students is that their classroom experiences are enhanced exponentially. Because they're going to study their material, but they're also going to generate a project based on the advanced manufacturing or the fab lab, or it's so much more relevant to how they're collecting their information and their data, how they're using computers. So your classroom experience is going to be enhanced. And
Don, can you give me a couple of examples, maybe one that would be more traditional, like an engineer design or something like that, and then something from maybe graphic design students?
Okay, strap yourself in. This is going to be a roller coaster ride, all right? And we've only got 40 minutes here. Okay, well, I don't know. Let's see if we can make this work. So we started out in engineering, and there were capstone projects. So prototype, formulate a project, and build. They typically will work with projects that the students generate. Immediately, I was able to connect with the medical, veterinary, and emergency services. So the veterinary, you know, we were going to look at anatomical educational models for different animals, but that one never really got off the ground. When we were, at one point, it was very popular to print prosthetics, and we looked at prosthetics. But that project was just, you know, one student interested, never really went anywhere. For the medical, we've done everything from just hold their in services to generate more medical models, frequently around hearts or anatomical stuff. So if you have a 3D printed heart in front of you that you can take apart and kind of look at the inside, that's helpful, right?
Yeah.
You have one on everyone's desk. So as a Gateway student, you might have one sitting right in front of you instead of having to wait in line to look at it. Gateway also, you know, through the Fab Lab, if you're a medical student and you want to look at a heart, we have 3D computers. We have virtual computers where you put glasses on like you're at a 3D movie and you can like pull it off the screen and pull it apart. So these are ways that those could do better. I've even connected with Aaron the Tree Guy, and we went and talked about different ways to recycle, CNC cutting. We've connected with graphic design immediately. So they started coming in and doing capstone projects where there's two-dimensional vector graphic software that they design in, and then we start expanding it into three-dimensional models. And they can work on design and design packaging. So imagine if you're a graphic arts student and you're trying to figure out a packaging design for something. Not only can you design it on the computer and get all the information from the instructor about aesthetics, good design, proper layout, how to determine font, different colors you should use, but then you can actually go through and print it, and then you can come out to the lab, 3D print the actual product, and then use the laser to generate the packaging material for it. So that person is going to have a lot more that an employer looks for when they walk in the door for an interview, because they're going to say, well, yeah, I've been through the steps involved in actually making something.
That is amazing.
Yeah. Since I came from an art background, I also immediately moved into offering digital arts for all my arts friends. And I went to school locally. If you go out to Parkside, they got a couple of my sculptures out there cemented in the ground. So I call my friends and I'm like, hey, let's do digital art Fridays, right? So a couple Fridays a week, we would come out. We did a lot of work with David Jones and Marilyn Propp, who he's a master printer, and he did Landfall Press in Chicago in the 90s. And he formed Anchor Graphics and was a teacher at Columbia in Chicago for a while. He's a true gem that he and his wife are both professional artists that moved to Kenosha, and he was doing workshops for a while. So we would do printing in the Fab Lab. How do you laser engrave a wood block? How do you ink it up? You know, experimentation with ink up a plate, laser off the excess and run it through the printer and what happens, you know. How do you use a computer to dissect the different layers? So we could connect with the arts. And I've even been able to connect with poetry groups. So we had Bonk do one of their things out here. When we do something, a lot of times people are like, how can you connect with every discipline? And it's like, how can you not connect with every discipline? Because everybody's using software. Everybody's using a website. Everyone's searching out their information. In the case of poetry, and I'll say it wasn't very successful, we held the reading out here, but we offered for the poets who were reading that night to come out to the lab and do a physical interpretation of one of their poems. You know, so possibly laser engrave it on watercolor paper, or maybe they'd want to do an abstract print on the 3D printer, you know, based on emotional feelings that they were trying to capture in the poem. But the reality of these spaces is that whole lateral intuitive leap. So when you're thinking in a line, you can only get so far and you can only go so fast. But when you have the ability to be creative and move sideways, and that's kind of what we do with these spaces. So you might not see the connection to English, to literature, to poetry, to music, but it's there. And sometimes it's a sideways leap, like corresponding mathematics to music. That's always fun, right? Or most people aren't aware of it, but aesthetics, which seems very subjective, is based on philosophical principles. You know, the concept of beauty, what is beauty? How does it work? And we've discovered that even aesthetics is a critical thinking factor in engineering. Engineers who study aesthetics and understand a little bit more about where it comes from and what it is tend to design better. You know, I think Apple did the aesthetic revolution with engineers back in the 90s with all of their products. They made their products look good. You know, when an engineer is worried about how something looks, they tend to design it even better, you know, or they're it's like they're setting parameters for how they need to design. So it's kind of upped the game in terms of engineering.
Well, so, and vehicle design probably is one of your oldest examples of aesthetics and power Let's talk a little bit more about those engineers and business applications for this, because I know originally, again, when we're talking historical, that seemed to be the more obvious example of how it could be used, where you might have a local business at the time when these types of machinery, this type of machinery was not available to the average business to do prototypes. Do you know, did they take advantage of that? Is that something that still happens?
Yeah, when we first started out, we had about six companies that were coming in to do their prototypes. So everything from Kennel would come in a lot, and they were prototyping different ways they could generate fixtures to assemble lighting. And they'd have, because they were using robots, you know, to apply the glue. We did a lot of work with American Metals. So they would be testing pipes and flange pieces, and they could come and print one and make sure that it fit and the channels were in the right spot before they actually had to go through the concept of prototyping one for real. We had an aluminum extrusion guy in Milwaukee who was coming to us. He could generate his cross sections of aluminum extrusions, you know, for less than $100. And if he went and had one generated for a prototype, he was paying $2,000 to $3,000.
Wow.
So a lot of companies that, before this became a bit mainstream, would take advantage of spaces like this. But again, a lot of people didn't know Fab Labs could do that for you. I frequently get people coming in. I think you said before, I don't want to misquote you, but something about, you know, what's in this for me, or why am I?
Right.
It's usually exactly the opposite. When someone walks through the door here, they remember that one thing that they had a concept for that they wanted to try and build, but they didn't know how. You know, everyone has that little widget or idea that they wanted to pursue, very mm-hmm. typically. And if not, a lot of times people are just interested from a hobby scale. So we've done things like, I had a quilters group come in, you know, and it was probably one of my favorite visits. You know, there was seven women who came in. They were used to doing quilting conventionally, and it had never occurred to them that they could laser engrave on fabric, or they could cut out multiple shapes as intricate as they want, and they would all be consistent. So it was kind of fun. You know, we laid fabric on a printer, and we tried 3D printing directly into the fabric. You can actually 3D print fabric that's similar to a chainmail. So there's all kinds of concepts that they wanted to run with.
Well, you know, and I guess you're bringing up an excellent point. It's so hard to know. I might be doing one sort of activity and it never even occurs to me that it could be done differently, or that a Fab Lab could offer me something. How do people catch a clue that it would enhance what they're doing or change what they're doing? How can they find out more about that opportunity?
We try to spread the word through events, and we do a lot of outreach with the schools. So hopefully the kids are talking to the parents. We jokingly say in the Fab Lab that we do pre-K to gray. A lot of the people who come in to use the space are retired people who are just, you know, and when you get a retired person in, a lot of times they're from the trades, which helps even more. But the idea of the space was, let's go back to the concept of library and social and community. We encourage people to come by just to experience it, especially if they're not sure how it would benefit them or what they might be interested in doing. Because 9 times out of 10, people walk through the door and they're just like, oh, you can literally see the window of possibility swinging open in their mind. And they start thinking of all these cool things, even if it's just at a hobby scale, you know, someone who does model trains or someone who's interested in botanics or growing stuff or flowers or someone who builds furniture. Recently, we've been doing a lot of guitar building. I was didn't really want to get into guitar building when I first took over the lab. I knew a lot of labs did, and I thought it was a rabbit hole, and I didn't really want to go there. But the second you build one guitar, everyone who comes in wants to build one. And then I think I was limiting the way I thought about it. So we've been doing things like reverse engineering parts, 3D printing bodies for electric guitars. I just 3D printed a fretboard. It'll be fit up with regular fret wire, so when it's on the guitar, you won't even really know the difference. And, oh, here's a good one. Saturday, our civil engineer is going to help us try to make concrete guitars. So a couple of tenets about the Fab Lab are directly related to what you're asking, and that is, since it is a social area, it is a place where you come and you kind of collaborate with other people. And as you probably know, if you're trying to solve a problem by yourself, you only have one brain. But if you have a couple people solving it, you know, even two people ends up being the thinking power of about six brains. You know, you're each going to have different areas of development and different areas of expertise and different experiences growing up. And you're going to be able to collaborate much more effectively, and you'll get a lot more out of just having another person help you with something. So collaborative environment. Our environment is typically problem solving, and that's helpful in education. And then we're also what we call cross-platform. So the concept of cross-platform is, again, what I was talking about earlier with lateral thinking. When you go cross-platform, you have, and we'll say, let's say I have project A, and I walk in and I want to 3D print project A because 3D printing is fun and sexy and cool, right? 3D printing is awesome, right? Yeah, let's 3D print this. But it might be more effective to subtractive CNC carve it. So the idea of cross-platform is having at your fingertips many different processes and picking and choosing the elements from each process that build it the most effectively. Now, physicists would call this kind of elegant design. And I can give you an example. I made a small holder for my phone, and you've probably, everyone at this point has probably seen like a little slat that has two little triangles that you stick in it, and then you stand your phone up on it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I made one of those for myself on the laser, and I travel a lot. So I made one that those two little triangles came out of the center of the rectangle, and the shapes nested perfectly so that the whole thing cut and I wasted nothing. So that's an example of what we call elegant design, you know, where you're thinking about the materials and you're thinking about the product. So the Fab Lab is one of those places that brings together so many of these elements that are just perfect. And this is where STEM comes from. And we can get into that if you'd like.
Yes.
Yeah, the idea in engineering is, you have all of these elements that reinforce learning, that reinforce creativity, that reinforce intelligence and collaboration, partnering and working with other people. You also have a discipline in engineering where you assume you're going to fail. So you do something, and when you fail, you figure out what went wrong, and you circle back, and you fix it, and you go on. That's the design engineering process. Now, that's kind of a modified version of empirical process. And anyone who watches or used to watch Mythbusters knows empirical method. You know, you test everything, and what proves true, you accept and build upon, and what doesn't, you reject. So in STEM, what happens is you take all of these concepts that work really well in engineering, and you give them to all these other disciplines. What discipline doesn't quantify stuff to determine its quality? You know, what discipline doesn't find different systems of belief or thinking or logic to solve the problems that are in it? I mean, even literature you can quantify, and art you can quantify. And that's the whole bit about aesthetics and subjectivity. So when you use the same tools, let's say in a sociology class that engineering is using, that's STEM methodology is basically engineering methodology applied across any discipline.
And what I think is interesting too, and we've talked about that earlier, you include that the STEAM with art being in the middle of that as well.
Yeah, I always tease and I say, well, if you're going to go that route, you know, and stick the A in there, you got to stick in the H for humanities and the L for language. It, now you have like a Shtahalim, you know, so there's, I dislike using the term STEM and I dislike STEAM. I like the idea of what we call integrated learning. Yes. So we kind of call it IL, and that's the idea that it's all cross-discipline. It's all based on different systems of knowledge, and systems of knowledge are hard and soft. So there's, you know, like harmonics in mathematics, there are certain numbers that applies. Now you're taking math and you're taking spatial and you're applying it to something like a stringed instrument. So there's already three disciplines you've got folded into something. So harmonics is a really interesting system. Abstraction, you probably understand what abstraction. I get my friends who are like, oh, I don't understand abstraction. It's like, well, you're speaking language. If I say apple and tell you I'm holding one in my hand, but you can't see it, you know what I'm holding, right? So even the word itself is an abstraction of a physical thing. And you teach people how to find these different ways of thinking. So associative things, you know, like everyone's played Mad Libs, right? That's a really great creative game or a way to stretch your brain. But all these different systems can be applied to any discipline. And then if you show the people in the discipline how to actually do a physical problem and solve a project and work together with other people, again, the learning experience becomes exponentially more meaningful. What STEM does is it really teaches people that what they're learning inside the classroom has repercussions outside the walls, which is kind of what we need right now. I won't go into my theories on education, but right now we're working with a system that's been around for, 600 or 800 years? And our technology, how kids get their technology, is completely different. So something we need to rethink.
Well, and it, you know, it's interesting. We wanted to talk a little bit about access and awareness. And for instance, you mentioned the quilting group that came in. Did they just call you up out of the blue? Did you and say, hey, why don't you come on over? I mean, how do people even think to come to you, and how would you like them to come and visit you?
Okay, maybe I'm selling myself a little short. I do kind of work tirelessly to kind of go out into the community and spread the word. So
really?
The FabLab itself, yeah, I'm sure, people have probably run into me at Party on the Pavement or at festivals. I was out at Jerry Smith Pumpkin Farm last month, you know, in preparation for our big pumpkin carving event, which I'll make a plug for, although this will air after we've had it, so, but if you were there, I hope you had a good time, right? Schools, I go out to board meetings. Everywhere I go, I talk to people. We do outreach with the community centers. Done a lot of work with Dr. John Bryant Center. You know, those are places if Gateway has a presence, it's so helpful to the community. So, I'm the guy who, when I'm out and I'm talking to someone and they go, you know, I'm interested in records. It's like, well, you should come into the Fab Lab and we should try to 3D print a record. You know, and one of the poets in Racine is interested in that project. I don't think I'm allowed to call him up by name, but, and every time I see him, I go, okay, I've been looking up and researching the stuff. Now you got to come in and work on it. So it's taken a little while, but it's basically grassroots networking that gets us off the ground. And then once you get it off the ground, hopefully, another thing we really try to do is when you walk through the door here, we really try to make you feel like it's your lab, because ideally it is. I mean, I work for everybody. Everybody's my boss. So if someone comes in where they're like, what are you interested in? How can we help you? What are you looking to do? You know? Oh, you work for a school? Hey, you should have us come out with the truck and we can do a project with your kids and get them excited about stuff. Or even something simple like just, we've done events and parties. You know, there's literally nothing we can't do. So that's kind of how we spread the word. And hopefully at some point, one of the quilters goes, the way I got the quilters was one of the people who works here at IMET was part of that group. And I said, you guys got to come check it out. You know, we even have a computer embroidery machine. I said, but have you ever thought about, you know, cutting shapes on the laser? And I was looking into different ways you can laser engrave different fabrics and different tricks you can use to, you know, not burn up too hot, not go through it. Yes.
So well, then I don't know that most of us have the level of imagination you have, John. So it's hard to even.
I don't know if that's true,
ask
Jane.
When you walk. No, I'm pretty sure it is true. But I've met you, remember.
Well, I would say people are not encouraged to use their creativity. I think we all
correct.
Have. And then when they do use it, maybe when they were younger, they weren't rewarded for it. They were punished for it. You know, maybe there was like a blowback because they got creative and everyone acted like, yeah, you don't know what you're talking about. So it's similar to people who draw. They always say, oh, I can't draw. It's like, well, did you actually practice? Did you stop in third grade when someone made fun of you and then you never practiced? So it's always at that level. So,
you know, we have just about 2.5 minutes left, and as I'd hate to end it on a boring note, but it, you know, we've talked to you, John. You sound like you work pretty much 24 hours a day, but are there others who are staffing the center?
Yeah. And I don't want to make it sound like that. I just put in a day like everybody else. We have a amazing technician here, probably one of the most talented and intelligent people I've ever met, Adam Reed. He's our technician. And then we generate work study whenever we can. So we have about two or three technicians at this point. And we have a casual position. Our casual position comes and goes. Right now we have someone who's applying for it. So you can find us at gtc.edu/fablab. And that's where you can view an events calendar for all the different cool things that we have going on, or just use that page to email me if you're interested in anything.
And as you mentioned, this is obviously part of the Gateway IMET campus in Sturtevant. Most of this is funded through Gateway. Do you have other funding sources?
No, we are funded by Gateway, but we are at a point where we used to just be completely free. Now we do ask you to cover your materials, and we ask you to compensate for whatever runtime that you're going on equipment. So the concept is we're trying not to bleed green. We're not trying to make money, but we're just trying to be self-sufficient. And the workshops we do charge for. But a lot of the equipment that's in here was purchased through engineering classes, so capital purchases. So primarily Gateway, and then the occasional grant and capital purchases.
Thanks so much, John. We've been talking with John Zarin, who is the coordinator of Gateway Technical College's Fab Lab, located in Sturtevant on the IMET campus. And I'm Jane Herring, thanking you for joining us today on Community Matters.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click Shows. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
All this week on WGTD's Noon Tunes, we're featuring the music of Kenosha's Cal Bergendahl Project. At the end of every WGTD midday newscast, we feature a song by a local artist, so why not join us for Noon Tunes Monday through Friday, 12:20 p.m. here on WGTD HD.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, the Kenosha County Aging and Disability Resource Center has launched a new family caregiver support group that meets in person and virtually the first Thursday of every month. For more information, call 262-605-6646.